When your money's on the line, choose a trusted sportsbook that gives you tools to win, like MyBookie. At MyBookie, doesn't matter if your team's up or down, you can easily cash out or bet the game live to come out on the winning side. Use MyBookie for daily odds boost, same game parlays, I like teasers, and take advantage of the huge prize pool contest. Plus, MyBookie currently has a no strings attached cash bonus that lets you deposit, withdraw quick. Carries a one-time rollover, can't find that anywhere else. Just use promo code 49ers, 49ERS, or scan the QR code on this video right next to my face here to claim your own cash deposit bonus now. That's promo code 49ers. So try my money bag. You basically roll the dice and it picks a team and gives you extraordinary odds on who's going to win the Super Bowl. Lots of fun options there, so bet anything, anytime, anywhere, and I do mean anywhere, wherever you are, you can bet with MyBookie. Just make sure you use the promo code 49ERS, and let's go. Let's make some money together.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is up, Niner faithful? I am here with the illustrious, the scholars and gentlemen, John Chapman and Wayne Breezy. We're going to talk about all things Niners. We're going to look back a little bit on the Ravens game, Christmas Day, the present that none of us wanted Santa to drop off, but it was there, so we got to deal with it. We got some coal in our stocking. We're going to talk about some things, look forward to what is happening on the injury front, maybe what needs to happen with Washington. There was some big news that came out of Washington yesterday, so we're going to see how that affects things, but we're going to dive into it. You are watching Johnny Dell's Football Academy. Well, let me first say, John and Wayne, thank you so much for joining us. Wayne, how was your Christmas?
Christmas was overall good, and then Santa got really drunk and didn't decide to drop off the last Christmas present for the 49er faithful, because the 49ers, even though they were at home, they kind of got obliterated. I made up my own word there. They got blasted. But, you know, watching the film, I felt good. I don't know why. Like, you know what I mean? I do know why, but after going back watching the film, watching the game again, I was like, okay, because the game got messed up real quick at a certain time. But Christmas overall was great. My friends are great. My family is beautiful. Everything is just great. It's good to be here too.
And John, you were at the game, so tell us, what was it like there at the game on Christmas?
It was expensive, Johnny. It was awesome, but you know, usually I always wait to buy my tickets last minute, and that's worked well like 40 times. There's two times it hasn't worked, was the Las Vegas New Year's game, and this one where prices kind of shot up at the end. But we had a good time. The game was frustrating, but it was such a cool experience. Monday Night Football, Christmas. I don't know how many times that opportunity is going to be presented. It didn't go well, but still, everything that the 49ers want is right in front of them. And I got to say, man, I'm pumped. Shout out to my man Johnny for putting this together. Wayne, John, and Johnny, I'm very, very happy. I feel like it's like a, I don't know, like a 1990 Johnny trio of bad characters coming together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this
is like Revenge of the Nerds 4.
Oh, there we go. Now we're talking Delta, Delta, or Lambda, Lambda, Lambda.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I love it. You know, Wayne, I love what you said. You watch the film and you feel a lot better. I did the same thing. I watched the film, and so I did a show right before the game. I think it was last Friday, and I had watched over three games of the Ravens tape, and I was watching their defense because I was like, what is making their defense so good? One thing, a few things I said on that show was, that one, if there was an argument for any other team having the best linebacker duo in the NFL, it was the Ravens. You know, we always say that Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw are arguably the best linebacker tandem. And really, the argument is not very wide. It's because you go, okay, who are we arguing here that could maybe be in that conversation? And to me, it was the Ravens, and that popped on film. That Queen and Roquan Smith were really good linebackers, and they play really well. They play that scheme really well. The other thing was, I got a lot of questions. People said, you know, their defensive line, you see a lot of sacks. Is that the strength of their defense? And I said, their strength of their defense is that they don't really have a weakness. Is that when you looked at their team from top to bottom, especially on film, they played so sound in the defensive backs, the linebackers, the defensive line all together. They were playing their scheme really, really sound. And yes, their defensive line was good, but I didn't see it as like this overwhelming force. It was when you mix that with really good linebackers, with a really good back end, you have a really good defense. That being said, I also was showing some clips that I thought, if we had them in base defense, that we could hit them over the middle on some passes. And that's exactly what happened. We hit several early chunk plays to George Kittle in against their base defense. And I said, we're going to have some openings in the run game, and it was going to be around the B gap. And because that's where the Rams were able to run. And we hit some big runs right in that area. You know, the things were going well. It was the turnovers that just absolutely killed us. And one thing that stuck out to me was how quickly that game flipped and got out of hand. You know, when you're watching just the offensive tape, it was like, here you come out of halftime, four plays, and on that fifth play, they were down by three scores. You know, by the fifth offensive play out of halftime, they were down three scores. And the game was just out of hand at that point. So, John, you know, I know you dive through the film a lot with on this. How did you feel coming out of it and watching the film?
You know, I felt like they saw something, like you said, that was very clear advantage. They wanted to get him in base personnel and then go to an empty set offensively. That was like Shanahan's what he wanted. And it worked, and you moved the ball very, very well. The problem was, that's also where almost all the turnovers came from. Three of the interceptions came with no running back, you know, back there to pair with Brock Purdy. It was split out wide. Even though Christian McCaffrey played every single snap of the game, which I think was another mistake, not that CMC being out there is a mistake, but Kyle didn't want to use him in the running game near as much. And I think that came back to get them. I really felt like the linebacker tandem of the Ravens paired with amazing safety play from Kyle Hamilton. That was kind of the difference maker. He had, you know, the Talanoa Hufanga game, and we didn't have our Hufanga. Instead, we had Jair Brown, which I thought had his worst game so far as a pro. And so we couldn't do that kind of triangle defense to leverage against some of those players. And I think that cost us. But the schemes and all those things were fine. You outgained him by almost 100 yards. You moved the ball fine. And that's without the penalties too. They moved the ball five, you know, first downs of theirs came from penalties. So schematically, player-wise, all those things were fine. Kyle kind of outsmarted himself, so the turnovers put us in a huge deficit. Special teams didn't help. And at the end of it, whenever you're playing against a good quality team, I would argue probably the best team in the NFL after seeing what we saw, 49ers just came up a little shy.
Yeah. Wayne, how did you feel about how we played Lamar Jackson?
I mean, I thought overall they played him well. I mean, 255 yards, 45 yards on the ground. I mean, that's textbook. That's a standard quarterback stat, right? Two touchdowns for him. That's standard quarter. That's 49ers quarterbacking right there, right? That's what Lamar Jackson did. He was a 49ers quarterback. I think it's more when those explosive plays happen. He only had one on the ground, and it was the one that actually gave them probably you can it gave them points. Obviously, they got a field goal at the end of the half, and it also gave them some juju, saying, "Hey, we could do some things coming out of this halftime." And I thought the Ravens and Lamar made the better adjustments, and I felt like the Niners just didn't adjust, and they came out of the half a little just a little off kilter. They couldn't find a rhythm, and all night they were trying to figure out a rhythm, and I just felt like the game plan was something totally different than what, you know, we're used to watching and what we're used to looking at on film. And when you go back and watch the film, the reason why I said I wasn't super worried is because the Niners could have literally scored at will if they wanted to, and they chose not to because they were just doing something totally different. I mean, even on the interceptions, let's go back to that second interception. I know we're going to talk about the first one, but the second one, that was just a bang-bang play made by Stevens because he knew, first of all, they were blitzing. I don't know if people realize that there was a double. It was like a two-cornerback blitz. You had a blitz from Stevens on one side. You had the blitz from Marlon Humphrey on the other side. That's why Marlon Humphrey was even in position to get the pass. So it's like almost that's that empty set John is talking about. And so, like, if the throw is made to Debo, it's literally a touchdown. He's 30 yards from the end zone with one guy to beat, and I think the one guy was Williams. He probably would have ran Williams over into the ground, and you're looking at a touchdown. So, like, these plays were there to work. They just – I don't want to say they were poor executed, but, I mean, you got to tip the hat to Stevens on the Ravens defense for just knowing the play. And that second interception to me was the game changer because it's like, dang, they're taking away our strength, getting Debo into space. And I think because they kept trying to do that and they didn't go with that 21 personnel, which they ran a lot, they didn't kind of like take advantage of the 21 personnel. I just felt like we didn't run the ball enough. And unfortunately, we ended up on the wrong side of the sticks.
Yeah, and that was an RPO sort of play. You know, we was you could see Brendel was out there run blocking on that play. And so they had a handoff. He pulls it down because he's seeing the blitz and Purdy was, you know, he could see it out of the corner of his eye and he turns to throw and it gets batted up. And I put out a tweet last week. I said, because I was watching the Baltimore film and I was watching the Jacksonville game. And I said, I felt like, I think I put on Twitter, I said, this feels like a game where Debo's going to have five or six screen passes. I mean, it's just watching the tape from Baltimore, you saw those plays were there. I saw three big screen passes that were there for Jacksonville and a guy like slipped. And I kept saying, I put it on my channel and I was putting the film on for everybody. I said, just imagine Debo in this spot, you know, so it was something that, like you said, it was there. You know, they saw it was there. They wanted to get it. And you have a guy, and, you know, as Kyle Shanahan said, made a heck of a play. And that sometimes it happens. And I do believe that was like the gut punch. I want to go back to the first interception, though, because there's some things that I saw in this game, and I want to talk about it a little bit, that sometimes you see with Kyle Shanahan. I want to get your guys' reaction to this. So I have it here. I'm going to pull it up, and we're going to walk through this. Sorry, I totally forgot to pull up the actual.
We're seeing how the magic is made right here. Now, John.
Oh, man, yeah, you're seeing how it's made.
This
I got
pay per view
go
right
folder
here.
This is I named it Purdy Pick, so I got to find it real quick.
Which one? There, Purdy Pick what? One?
Purdy Pick. There it is. Yep. This was the first Purdy Pick versus Baltimore. So this is something that we see from Kyle Shanahan, and I've heard some criticism from different quarterbacks over the years about how Kyle Shanahan designs his offense. And they go, you know, sometimes this I don't fully understand what they're trying to do here. And I think it's always because they're looking at things through the lens of a quarterback, not a play designer. And Kyle Shanahan sometimes will get into this thing where he designs something so specifically for how a specific defense plays their a certain coverage that he believes he's going to get. And so it's very reliant upon you have to have the exact look that you're going for. And he's very confident that he's going to get that look. And when he gets it, it's amazing. Guys are wide open. Everyone's calling him the genius. Everyone's saying this is why Shanahan is the way he is. When it doesn't work, you can get plays like this. And so what we have here is this was the very first pick from Brock Purdy. And you're going to have Debo running kind of a through route. This is a variation on a double post, okay? So you got Debo running a through route slash kind of post. It's either a lazy post, which is sometimes what you see on film from Debo, or it's a through route. Hard to tell 100%. And then you have Ayuk running kind of what was called a widened hammer or a widened post route. So he's going to widen a little bit and then he's going to hit a post. Okay, let's go run a little bit deeper. So we'll see. What they're expecting here is they're expecting cover three. So I'm going to switch this to blue. So they're expecting deep thirds here. Okay, from Baltimore. And so what they're going to do with Kittle is Kittle's going to kind of come up here and he's going to run a little out and sit. And then Juszczyk's going to run a little whip route and come back in. It's what's called a choice out China usually. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to get the deep third guy to drive on Kittle and occupy the backside hook curl in this cover three onto Juszczyk. And that's going to occupy both of these guys out of this field. So then you get a clear stretch on the middle safety. And so as Purdy drops back, he's just got to read the deep safety. And normally, the way that the Ravens will play this, they're going to want this Will linebacker to end up matching that over route, that through route from Debo. So they've got a way to occupy, let's clean this up a little bit. They've got a way to occupy the hook curl here with, dadgummit. I don't normally do this. They've got a way to occupy the hook curl here with Juszczyk running this little choice out China. They've got a way to occupy the deep third corner with Kittle, because I saw this several times in the game that the way that Baltimore was running this, their corners were matching any of these sort of intermediate routes on the mm-hmm. outside. And so now you have a clear stretch. And so if they're in cover three, you're going to have probably Brandon Ayuk wide open, wide freaking open, or Debo is wide open. So it's probably going to be 1-2 Ayuk, Debo. And most likely you would get Ayuk here wide open for a touchdown. The problem is that Baltimore didn't run cover three. And so you see they're right. going to widen this
That's
out
what I was
again.
Trying to say. Yeah. There it is.
Yeah, they're widening McCaffrey out. And the idea is you're going to widen this guy a little bit too. Okay, you want to widen the other linebacker. So you're opening up that middle space of the field so that you can have this horizontal stretch.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Of a deep third safety. That's what they're trying to do. And the problem here is that in this coverage that Baltimore called, you have no good answers. So Baltimore ends up running a cover six here. So Baltimore is, we're in a deep quarter, we're in a deep quarter, and then we're in a deep half. Now, really, you would think that the middle of the field would be open, but the way that Baltimore ran their cover six a lot in this game is that Humphrey, or who was ever the corner that was on the cover two side, anything that went vertical, he would match. So the deep half safety was actually more playing almost like a trick safety, or mm-hmm. he's sitting there just helping anything kind of down the seams was what he was really playing. So you don't have anything to really grab this safety and pull him wide. And that's what ends up happening here, because Brock Purdy's going to see the safety go and he's going to think, oh, I can hit Debo in the middle. But as we watch this play out, you can see Hamilton is not worried about anything deep outside. He's watching down the seam. That's where his eyes are. And you're going to see Debo's going to come up through here. Brock Purdy sees a little window and he's going to try and fit it in here. But if you see how they're able to match all this up, Humphrey's able to take Kittle. I thought watching the broadcast that Juszczyk was open and he wasn't. They're going to be able to match on Juszczyk. Humphrey's going to take Debo coming through. And then you got these two deep quarters guys bracketing Ayuk on his post. And really, you know, McCaffrey, he's not even here as an outlet. He's just kind of there to widen somebody. So, you know, Purdy said he got to progress here. I don't see where you can even progress to. I don't see a good option to check down, because you got a guy driving. This is covered. You got Brackett over here and you got CMC just sitting here. I mean, the only guy that looks somewhat open is Debo, and the safety's just sitting because he's not threatened outside. And so this is a play, Kyle, you know, yeah, Purdy makes this play worse. Kyle got out-schemed here.
Yeah, I thought that happened several times this game. But the problem is the context. It's first and 10. It's first and 10 on the 15.
Yeah.
And so you hear Purdy talk about, like, progressing, man, you hit the out route and you throw the ball out of bounds, you ground it, you put the ball in a safe space, all those things. This is first and 10. You're using CMC as a decoy that's not even running a route.
Right.
And he's not even in the backfield, so the illusion, and this is why I think one of my biggest problems with Kyle and the scheming and all the things going on right now, when you take away the threat of running, those linebackers get to go straight to their kind of, you know, drop sets and pay attention to the routes. They're not looking in the backfield. They're immediately opened up to Kyle Juszczyk and Kittle on that 2x2 side that way, and it's just like, man, you are giving them the answers to the test, and that's what's driving me crazy. And so that's a first and 10. If it's third and 10, Brock wants to force that throw in, that's one thing. But he didn't recognize, you know, it was kind of like a modified cover six on the back end whenever the corner didn't drop. And it was open. Like, if you throw that ball to Debo, whenever he's in his break, it could have been a thing. But he didn't recognize the coverage fast enough. He even said that in the presser. He's like, I should have recognized his quarters covered to that side. And so... yeah, that's the thing. Don't put the ball in jeopardy on first down. It's your first play in the red zone. It's first and 10 from the 15 in the first quarter of the first drive. Not one run
and,
play.
And you had just moved the ball really well, and your defense had forced Baltimore to three and out. You know, and this is the criticism that we see from – I keep pointing over here because I'm pointing at my other screen that I was using to break this down. But
point at me all you want, Johnny. Bring it, man.
this is the criticism we see from especially, like, you know, guys like JT O'Sullivan or maybe Chase Daniel. You know, they will talk about the design sometimes of the 49ers offense, that they don't like it as a quarterback. Kurt Warner has said this, you know, going back to the Jimmy G days. He's like, sometimes I feel like it's drop back and then turn around, this guy's going to be open. And when you start looking at the play design, if they're in cover three again, that is a beautifully designed play against the way the Ravens play cover three, but they weren't in that. And sometimes you feel like, you know, with Kyle Shanahan, it's kind of like, I almost compare it to, you know, when you have like a guy like Patrick Mahomes, that sometimes Patrick Mahomes will put the ball in harm's way and do things that, you know, when you really stop and think about it, you go, that would drive you nuts the way he can do some things, especially like the last game they played. But then he does so many other things really, really well. You completely overlook that sometimes. You know, do we take that same approach here with Kyle Shanahan and say, you know what, I'm willing to overlook that because so many other times, so many other games, you know, he does this sort of thing and calls it at the exact perfect time. You know, how do you feel about that? Is that something that we just say, this is just what we live with Kyle Shanahan? Or you say, you know what, I really wish he would start on some of these plays, especially first down in the red zone, give his quarterback multiple answers against multiple coverages. What do you think, Wayne?
Yeah, like you have to give your quarterback options because the first option is not going to always be there. I mean, coverage shrinks in that area, right? Like there's not enough space. It worked because we had plenty of space and you had guys kind of like stretching the field and other players doing their thing to create the space for those passes to George Kittle to be wide open across the middle. And you saw it throughout the game. That's how it worked when you had distance and space, you know, to be created. But in the red zone, it shrinks. And so when you said Kyle got out-schemed, he absolutely did. Like, he thought his guy would have been open because he thought it was going to be a certain coverage, and his quarterback was told to throw the ball. Like, that's the issue. Opposed to Brock Purdy realizing that this doesn't look right. This might not work. And I don't like it when Kyle, you have a guy like Brock Purdy who clearly has a great mental for the game, the aspect of the game. He's a very student of the game, right? He's very smart. He's one of the quickest processing throwing quarterbacks in the league. He's able to get through his progressions. But when you only leave him with one progression and he's, you know, he's going through the progressions, but if there's nobody open, like that's the throw. And then we're saying throw it away, throw it away, throw it away. Where? Debo was open. Let's not say that he wasn't open. Debo was open. It was just a bad moment. And Kyle Hamilton, if it's any other safety, possibly that ball gets dropped. But it wasn't. It was Kyle Hamilton. And so, like, I think he plays a huge part into why that ball was even picked, whether it was cover three, cover six, cover whatever. It doesn't matter. They had a better player out there on the football field. When it comes to Kyle Shanahan, I think what makes me more upset is the simple fact, like John alluded to earlier, dude, it's first and 10, and you can run the ball once. What if you get 19 yards on a run? I mean, explosive runs work just as well as explosive pass plays. And we need to find a way to remain balanced. I don't understand why Kyle just felt like it had to be throw, 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 throw. I don't get it.
Yeah. You know, and one thing to also remember, this was in the scripted portion. So, you know, this was their very first scripted red zone play. So whatever they had seen from film, they had seen the very first play they wanted to come out in. They were so confident. They went all week saying, we believe they are going to be in cover three zone, first play in the red zone. They were so confident in that they drew this whole play up, and then it backfires on you. And I agree with you exactly. And John, I want to hear your thought on this. I would love to see a test the waters play there if this is the scripted thing. You know, come out in this formation and motion CMC out, do a little bump motion, then bring Debo around on a reverse or something. Okay, or on a
didn't
little
do that
sweep.
One time.
You know,
didn't
like
do it once all game.
Right. Like do something where you're going to be able to see how they react to this motion. What coverage are they in? And then we can go for the shot play. And if you only get 1 yard or minus 1 yard on that play, you're fine because you got the information you needed. That was my only issue with this. I'm like, this is in the scripted portion. You were so confident that you were going to have cover three in this, that this is what you called, that you didn't even try and test. You didn't even do any data mining to figure out, you know, what coverage you were in. And John, you know, you had coached for a long time. How does that make you feel?
Well, one, like, I'm really big. I was a defensive-minded coach. That's kind of how, you know, DC was my first, you know, coordinator position and whatever else. You don't turn the ball over in the red zone. You don't put the ball in jeopardy in the red zone. And the 49ers have the second-best red zone percentage in the NFL throughout this year. So this is a small sample size, and that's why it was so weird to me. Because how do the 49ers win their games? Their physicality, run game. You establish everything, move the pocket, play action, boots, all those things. They didn't exist this game. And so you go out there first and 10, and, you know, back to your question earlier, Johnny, about Shanahan says, do this, throw it to this guy. And we saw it in the other scripted portion in the very first drive of the third quarter. It's third and six. I think it was third and six. Might have been third and four.
Yeah.
Come out in an empty set again, and you've got one-on-one coverage dictated on the outside to Brandon Ayuk. Instead, you throw a little curl route to Willie Snead with freaking two of the most athletic linebackers in the NFL and a nickel guy sitting on him. But that was Purdy's first read, and he's supposed to throw that based on the alignment pre-snap. I get it. But at some point, somebody has to say, Ayuk one-on-one with their worst cornerback, or Willie Snead against the player, the NFC player of the week, and one of the most athletic linebackers. Like, that seems simple to me. And that's my problem, Johnny. These scripted issues where Shanahan is at his best. I'm putting my kids through college betting 49ers score in the first possession. It did not work this week. But overall, they're kind of the best, you know, in the NFL at it. Kyle sometimes has to be checked. And it's just like, man, if you just would have ran the ball, like you said, data mine it, figure out what they're going to do in this coverage, get your validation, then try to take advantage of it. You don't have to freaking go gung-ho on first and 10 from the 15 on the first drive.
You know, so we've had some struggles offensively against the NFC North, except for the Steelers, apparently. But when you look at our worst offensive performances of the year, you're talking the Browns, the Bengals, and the Ravens. You know, these were none of these were good offensive performances, and all from the AFC North. Did I say NFC North? I meant AFC North if I did. Anyways.
Hey, we lost to the NFC North, too.
But do you guys start to worry, you know, with what we've seen going against these defenses out of the AFC North? I think right now, to me, as I look at the landscape of the AFC, honestly, right now, the two teams I'm foreseeing in the Super Bowl on their end is either the Ravens or the Browns. I know that sounds crazy. We want to hype up Buffalo, Miami. I think they're playing good. I think the defenses of the Browns and the Ravens are going to end up, you're going to have a defensive showdown in the AFC Championship game. If the seeding works out for it to be Browns and Ravens, I think that's going to be an amazing AFC Championship game. Are you concerned with seeing how we've performed against both those defenses if this was a Super Bowl preview? You know, many people were going into this game saying, this is going to be a Super Bowl preview. It's going to be that, and then it being a blowout, and everyone went, well, that's going to be a lame Super Bowl if that's a Super Bowl. Are you concerned?
No. Not at all, because at the end of the day, this could have been simply something Kyle just testing the waters, knowing that you're going to see this team some point in the Super Bowl. You possibly will see him again, and then you'll hit him with the haymaker or something that they've never seen before. I think this was a game to go through where they were testing and trialing out certain things. To see Kyle get trumped, like on that first particular, you know, interception that we just talked about, I never said that it was a bad play call. What I said was they should have ran the ball, period. You can live for another throw. There's plenty of other high percentage calls you could have done. Debo runs a route. He's open for a split second, and the window shrunk. It's kind of like what it is. But at the end of the day, I don't think they have to worry about any team in the NFL, because the only way the Niners lose games is if they lose games. Like, they literally lose these games when stuff isn't clicking, right? When they're not – they're not in a rhythm, when they're not just doing things properly right. We kind of know what these other teams were. We know what the Baltimore Ravens are. They're going to be a defensive team with Lamar Jackson, right? You don't necessarily have to worry about anybody else. We know what the Cleveland Browns are. They're going to ground and pound the ball, and they're going to try. Now they got a Joe Flacco as the quarterback, so now they're going to throw the ball, right? They're going to get that ball down the field. He's a big-time thrower. So you kind of know what these teams are, their defense. But the Niners are defensive too, and they have to find, you know, they have ways that they can, I feel like, can trump these defenses. I believe in Kyle, and I believe in the players that much.
Yeah, I'll say this. There's two defenses I don't want to play against. It's the Minnesota Vikings, who are a half game out with Brian Flores. What that dude's doing right now is, from a film perspective, is about as fun defensive tape as you could watch.
Oh, yeah. I think I mentioned that on my show before, the Ravens. I said, you know, watching the Ravens and how sound they were on defense was the second funnest film I watched, other than Brian Flores, because what Brian Flores is doing
is
so creative. I mean, You think that they're playing that. Man on all these different blitzes.
Right.
But he's coming up with all these interesting zones, and the rules that he's got to have for his zones on these things are amazing, because you just watch what they do and you rewind it 10 times and go, they're playing some sort of zone. They're
it's playing hard to some find sort the of
zone here. And it's hard to figure out what the rules are. Yeah. Like, that's what's actually fun. It's like a figuring out a puzzle. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I'm not worried about the Vikings. I'm just saying, just from a defensive perspective, I think the two is the Minnesota Vikings and then the Cleveland Browns. Now, can Joe Flacco make it that far? We'll see. They're the 5 seed currently. We'll see. But I'm not worried. Here's what's crazy. I'm not that concerned about the Baltimore Ravens. Are they a good team? Are they the best team? Sure. We moved the ball for over 400 plus yards. And that's with 4 or 5 possessions ending in a turnover. So I think that you can clean up a couple things. The ball's not going to continue to bounce their way like it did every freaking play. The penalties, the horrible officiating, that's not going to be replicated again, but it does seem to happen a lot of 49ers games. So, you know, my cause for concern, I don't give a damn who we play. If it's, you know, the 85 Bears in the Super Bowl, you put me in the Super Bowl, you give me a 1-game sample size. Odds be damned, I don't care. I'll take our chances. I know Kyle hasn't fared well in the big game, but you get me in that game, I'll take whatever it is. You know what I mean? I don't care who it is.
And I don't see anybody in the NFC standing in our way. There's no. there's a Cowboys fan in one of y'all's channels. I don't know if it's you, John, or you, Wayne. He's popping off in the chat in one of your channels, and he's high on something because he keeps thinking that they want to face us in the playoffs.
How'd that work the last
time? We're living rent-free in your head if you're on one of our channels.
Dallas can't win on the road. That's number one.
Ever. So, Dak can't.
And on number two, if the 49ers had to go to Dallas, which they won't, they would beat him again. So, like, he doesn't want the smoke. He needs to figure
they
out.
They don't match up against the 49ers. They're not in the same class.
They
got
to figure out how to beat the Detroit Lions this week. That's what he needs to focus on. Timothy, go jump into a Lions chat and see if you can get some intel from them.
There we go. We got you, Tiny Tim. We're glad you're here. Subscribe, buddy.
I want to get to a couple super chats here. Thank you so much, Kevin Johnson. He says, can you find gentlemen, give us your explanation on why Kyle's fourth quarter when trailing is so one-sided? I feel like if Kyle isn't rolling by then, he seems stuck on plays. You know, they put up the graphic. Kyle's like 1-32, something like that, when trailing by more than 8 points in the fourth quarter is the worst. He's the only coach that hasn't had a win. I think that's actively coaching that hasn't had a win in that scenario. Why is that?
Well, go ahead.
I mean, it's got to be his philosophy, right? Like, Kyle has an explosive scheme that, if executed properly, because that's what it comes down to with Kyle Shanahan, the execution, basically, because he feels like every play call that he calls is going to be for 7 points, like 6 and then an extra point, like every time they step onto the football field. And when you go back and watch the film, you'd be like, dang it, this person made that block. Or if this happened, it probably could have gone. We just talked about on that second interception, like, if the ball wasn't tipped, it was getting into one of the most explosive players in the NFL's hands, and he just had to beat a one-on-one. That's Kyle Shanahan. I feel like he thinks his team is just going to come out offensively and, like, just take a crazy lead, and it is what it is. And kind of when he plays with the lead, they don't lose. When he doesn't have a lead, though, I don't think he's that type of play caller that can kind of, like, figure it out. Maybe his stuff needs to be simplified when we're losing just a little bit. Like, simplify it. Just have a check down. How about in front of Brock Purdy opposed to the side of Brock Purdy? So he could just float it right there. You know, just little things, you know, to kind of get some juju and get back into a game. I don't know why that stat is, like, really – that's a bad stat. It's terrible, but – I think his mindset is that we're not going to be trailing in games. So,
yeah, that's fair, but sometimes things go the wrong way. And so I went back after the 3-game loss and I charted every single play call in the fourth quarter overtime when it was within 8 points. Okay. So one possession games in the fourth quarter, whether the 49ers were up or down. And so for a 2-year stretch, Kyle Shanahan had an 85% pass call rate when it was a one possession game in the fourth quarter in overtime. That's simple to me. Like the panic mode that he gets in pressure situations, and you see it on the sideline. And I love Kyle. He's my number one head coach. If I could rebuild a team, start to scratch, Kyle's my number one pick. But This is the flaw. Now, you almost broke the record for most consecutive games by winning, you know, 12 points or more with six consecutive games. That was awesome. But at some point, you got to win from behind. And even whenever we saw, I think we saw this in the Bears game when we were up 3 points in the fourth quarter, he still kept passing. Like, you got to be able to rely on the run. It is consistent. It helps your defense. It calms everybody down. Play the odds. It's how you build this team. It's how you built this team. So rely on the run. 85% passes in one possession games in the fourth quarter overtime. That's crazy. Now, that's not updated since the three-game loss streak, but I'm not sure there were a lot of one-possession games before this Ravens game.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's not the way this team is built. When you look at the offensive line, what have they always waited towards? And I always point to Mike McGlinchey, okay? He is the only first-round investment in their offensive line. And what do we always see for Mike McGlinchey? What do we always say about Mike McGlinchey? He's a fantastic run blocker. He is a below-average, at best, pass blocker. I think that is an encapsulation of how Kyle Shanahan builds his offensive line. And so when you are in a situation where your offensive line has to drop back 15 times in a row or 10 times in a row or even 5 times in a row, that is not looking good for your quarterback. It's just not, because these guys are not good. They don't practice it. They don't rep it. They weren't drafted because of it as guys who can drop back. And so you always see this always, like you say, it becomes so predictable. You're dropping back and it's like, you see the quarterbacks, every quarterback we've had, it's they're almost going into panic mode because within 2.5 seconds, there's a guy in their lap and it becomes so hard to execute and it becomes so frustrating. And then it's putting your defense and it snowballs and it does all these things. And that's why, again, Kyle Shanahan, it's great when you're running ahead, but it's so hard, especially I think that's why it's so so weighted. But I also want to bring this up. You know, Mike Sando here on Twitter gave us some really good perspective on this. I'm going to zoom in on this so we can see a little bit better. You know, regarding the 0-38 down 8+ in the fourth quarter, all teams win 7% of the time. That's the winning percentage. The best in the league is Kansas City. Not surprising. They're built to throw the ball. So when they're in a throw the ball situation, they can do better than everybody else. And they also have that, you know, Mahomes kid. I hear he's going to be pretty good. And Green Bay was after that. And, you know, they had that Rodgers kid for a while. He was pretty good. When you look at Seattle, is then next in there. They're 1-38. Carolina 1-58. Indiana 1-36. And when we talk about, you know, he's the only one without a win, okay, we can say that, but you know, there's a lot of teams here that only have one win. Baltimore 2-22. Same sort of, they're built very similarly to the 49ers. Dallas 2-37. So there you go, Timothy. Dak is 2-37 when down 8 points. And so, you know, I think there's also a perspective there of that very few teams, it's really hard to win when you're in that situation, especially with the kind of parity that's in the league. And then when you add that on top of a team that is built to run the ball, now that's why you're 0-37, 0-38 now, you know, trailing in the fourth quarter.
My thing is, I wish there was just one coach that could have like three like buttons a game, where it's just like one coach just sitting up there in the booth, and whenever he pushes the button, Kyle has to call a run play. Just three times. And whatever happens, Kyle gets cut off. It's a run play, whatever Brock wants, and that's just what we do. Like, just
kind of like the golden tickets with America's Got Talent. You know, they get one per season. This is the one. All right, here. I'm vetoing Kyle. It's going to be a run play.
Run play three times.
Give it to Jane from payroll or Joan from payroll. I want Joan from payroll.
Come on, Tom,
to have it right there.
Yeah, there we go.
Another super chat here was good news is Browns and Ravens would face off early in the playoffs. Also, that physical Ravens defense everyone is praising will be PI against league darlings like Allen and Mahomes, meaning they're going to get called for a lot of pass interferences when they go against you know, some big name quarterbacks. How you guys feel about that? Is Baltimore's their Ravens defense a little overbloated? Did they fill up too much on Christmas ham?
No, I mean they are physical, but I mean they didn't get too many penalties in this game playing over physical. I just don't think the Ravens play well in the playoffs, just like the Cowboys.
What's Lamar have one playoff win entire career?
I mean he
wins. I love Lamar though. I'm not trying to.
He's 20-1 against the NFC during the regular season. listen, I'll live with that record, but if he can't win in the playoffs, what's the problem? I know Brock Purdy can win in the playoffs, though. So, like, at the end of the day, we look at this game, we got our butts smacked. Okay, oh, well, did we make mistakes? Yes. Was Brock Purdy the worst person on the field? Yes, he was bad. He was terrible. No matter what the context is, Brock throws four interceptions. It's hard to win a game when you have four turnovers. Very hard. Like, it's very hard. So, unfortunately, and the crazy thing is, even with three of those turnovers, we were still in the game.
Yeah.
So, like,
it's 4-point game.
It's amazing, right? But at the end of the day, look, the Niners got their butt whipped. And it's really like, you know, Fred Warner said it best. He says, look, we're not looking for seeding. That's not the goal. The goal is to win the Super Bowl. Now, you can't put your worst stuff out there and expect people to believe you're going to win the Super Bowl. But I don't think the Niners were even at their worst. The game plan itself just seemed a little off-kiltered when you run the ball 18 times. And I
offensively.
Offensively. And
defense was fine.
It was fine, but it was on the field too much, and they started making bonehead plays.
Yep.
So, like,
yeah,
you said the snowball effect. So at the end of the day, you know, as a 49er fan, we're fine. We're going to be fine. It was an AFC game. We got beat on national TV. Let's go and dominate these next two NFC teams. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I didn't see anything coming out of here going, okay, you know, somebody's figured out the blueprint. This wasn't like how Philly fans and Philly reacted after we absolutely curb stomped them. This wasn't, you know, a situation where it was like, oh, dear Lord, the blueprint's out. This is how you beat us. And I don't see that. You know, it's not on film. There's no systemic problems that I'm seeing. These are just, you know, it's a bump in the road and you move on. Now, one thing coming out of the game as we move forward and look forward to the Commanders now, going out to FedEx Field, there's some injuries that are piling up. You know, we got Trent Williams. They're not sure when Kyle had the last press conference I saw, I didn't see, you know, any major update on Trent Williams. You got Aaron Banks is dealing with the toe. You got somebody else went down. Feliciano went down as well, or Jalen Moore, excuse me, had the concussion, and now Jair Brown is looking like he's got a knee issue. You know, you add that to Hufanga is, you know, obviously out for the season. How are we starting to feel with some of these injuries? AA, you know, we don't know what the status is there. It's kind of this, we're seeing how it goes, and that's been the story for 2 weeks. That's what we heard last year, and he was out for like 6 weeks. You know, we don't know what the situation is going to be there. They went out and they signed Sebastian Day. You know, so to me, that says that they're more concerned that they're not going to see him within the next 3 weeks. They need to bring somebody in to help, you know, solidify the interior defensive line to get that number one seeding. To me, that's what the Sebastian Day signing says. When I put it in the notes, I almost said Sheldon Day. And then I was like, wait a minute. That ain't the right player. That was the guy who left the 49ers. But, you know, how do you feel with the injuries coming up? What are your biggest concerns out of all those?
I mean, injuries are just a concern. I mean, you can say that for all 32 football teams. But to focus on the 49ers, it's always a concern. It's always going to happen. It's just the timing of it. I'm more upset about the timing of when the injuries are starting to happen. It's like a lot of the players played pretty much injury-free. You know, I'm sure they're banged up, but they've played pretty much injury free, and war of attrition is starting to set in. So it is what it is. They're going to have to find a way to get over that this last hump. I don't think the injuries are that serious, though. I think when it comes to Eric Armstead, they're monitoring it properly because of what happened last season. So since they went through what happened last season, they're probably like, hey, let's go get Sebastian Joseph Day. Let's give him some more time to rest and heal up so he's good to go in the playoffs, because Eric Armstead was probably one of the best defensive players in the playoffs last year for the San Francisco 49ers. And I think they want him to get back to that level of playing. So I'm cool with that. Trent Williams, he was limited at practice, which is great, opposed to just not being at practice. So I don't think the groin injury was that too severe. I don't think Brock Purdy's stinger is severe. I don't think the injury to Jair Brown is severe. I just don't think they're that severe. These are the war of attrition injuries where they're starting to kind of like set in right now. The Niners just got to keep their eyes on that prize and find a way to get through whatever they're going through. The players that are out for the season. It sucks, but they found a way to move on from that. And I know we talked about how bad Jair Brown played this particular game, but he's kind of been pretty much on average, an average safety for the San Francisco 49ers during his rookie campaign. So I look, you got the Commanders and you got the Rams, two beatable teams, two teams they should dominate. I don't think these injuries are going to make much of a difference.
Hey, Faithful, are you facing challenges getting new clients for your business? Power Brand Systems is changing the game for many businesses like yours. Score touchdowns worth of quality leads with their innovative online marketing tools. And also, I got to say this. The owner is part of the Faithful, close friend of mine. He helped build the 49ersrush.com, which is feeding my family. Whether you're aiming to skyrocket your business visibility with high converting ads, stand out on Google searches, or gather 5-star reviews, Power Brand Systems has got your back. And my favorite thing about what they do, they have a social media planner feature that's a true game changer. I've been using it, post flow effortlessly across various social media accounts. You won't find this level of convenience anywhere else. And on top of that, you can try it for 14 days completely risk-free. Visit PowerBrandSystems.com/John, J-O-H-N. That's PowerBrandSystems.com/John to get started today. Because let's face it, when it comes to boosting your business, why make it complicated? Keep it simple. Keep it smart. Here's to your unstoppable success.
Yeah, I think, you know, my concern isn't the injuries. It's stacking injuries at the same position. And so whenever you get all the defensive tackles injured, now you bring in Sebastian Joseph Day, who's been awesome. That alleviates a lot of the stress. Now you've got the Jair Brown, who did not practice. We'll see how long he's out. It means Isaiah Oliver is going to be out there. It means Logan Ryan's going to be out there. Shetty had said, you know, any of these guys that play corner or safety or maybe even linebacker can play safety. That's scary. That is scary. I don't like that. Now, good news. There's good news when we talk about these injuries. Danny Gray brought off IR. Maybe that means we can get some depth and a decent punt returner. That would be huge. I would love to see that. I'm not sure he's going to be activated just yet, but the opportunity is there. And Oren Burks back practicing. DFF is not a legitimate linebacker in the NFL. He really isn't. And I like him, and he's great, and he's a filling guy.
Thank you.
But he is bad on tape all the freaking time. So, and they were able to mask a lot of his issues. Like, there weren't a lot of red flags in his games the past 2 weeks, but like, it's an issue. A big reason why Fred Warner had all those missed tackles the last couple weeks is because DFF's out there. He's having to play Superman ball. When Oren Burks comes back, you don't have to do that. So there are some positives coming from this. Trent Williams practicing on a Wednesday, even though it was a walkthrough. That's huge. That says a lot.
Yeah. You know, and that ties right into Super Chat here from Kevin, who says tackling is a major problem. Yeah. And, you know, because when I watched DFF, and this goes back for a couple of years now, is that every time I watch him, I was been scared to death when he's on the field. If he's one-on-one in space, you can guarantee that tackle's not being made. You know, I think the reason he plays is because he plays assignment sound, is that when he's asked to be a force defender and kind of shuffle things or funnel things back to Greenlaw and Warner, he's great. He can go and he'll take on a lineman and he'll end up there in violence. You know, he does decent on his depth drops for pass coverage, but tackling has always been a terrible problem with him. And, yeah, you know, it's like, he doesn't track the near hip. Something's off there of why he doesn't get the tackles, and it just drives you nuts. And I think Oren Burks is going to be a much bigger lift than people think, because, you know, we don't think about third linebackers as much anymore. So, you know, I think he's going to be a big lift.
And I'll say this too, with the rookies, D Winners and Jalen Graham, when they have come in and spot duty and like in blowouts, they're not consistent enough to warrant gameplay. So like, yeah, I understand now the DFF getting the nod over those guys, because they're just not ready. The splash plays are there, but the negative splash plays are there too. So I get it. Oren Burks coming back, gigantic. I really wish more people would understand how valuable that dude is to just a sound based defense. It's only 25 plays of the game. It's huge.
It's just, yeah, he's a solid linebacker, right? Like that's what he is. He's a linebacker that knows how to wrap and tackle. And so when Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw are out there, they don't have to overcompensate. I don't know if you noticed, but when Oren Burks is out there in those base downs, they're not overcompensating, and next thing you know, they're playing pass coverage and the defense looks sound. It's because they have a legit linebacker on the football field out there. So I'm so glad he's going to be back. It sucked that we had to lose him for 3 weeks or so, but if he's back, that's good for the 49ers defense, and it'll be good to get back into football shape against the Commanders on Sunday.
Yeah, you definitely don't see it. You see a lot less over pursuit when Oren Burks is there. When he's not there, you can tell Fred and Dre, they're so worried about, they don't want to just funnel that run back. They don't want to funnel somebody back towards Flanagan fouls because there's not the trust there that tackle is going to get made. And so, you know, they'll over pursue, they'll get out of their rush lanes, they won't be as quick on things. You know, they're, like I said, they're pressing and they're trying to make up for it. I want to hit another super chat here. This is from the Lone Draftsman. Thank you so much for the super chat. He says 49ers Ravens rank both fourth and fifth in DVOA history through 14 games going back to 81. These are two really good teams as far as, you know, DVOA. And so he's not concerned in a rematch. Either could win it. Yeah, there's no problems there with either way. And that's a great way of saying it. You know, there's big news looking at the matchup here against the Commanders that they benched Sam Howell and they're bringing out Jacoby Brissett against the 49ers. How do we feel about this? You know, kind of a late news thing and you know, maybe the 49ers coming off of a short week, they started watching film on Sam Howell and suddenly, you know, game plan install day, they're finding out they're going against Jacoby Brissett. Wayne, do you got any concerns there going against Jacoby Brissett now, you know, kind of as this wild card thing thrown in there?
Not really. Just another guy that they got to, you know, prepare to take a run. Another, I don't want to say he's like a super mobile quarterback. That's not his thing. He's going to look to stay in the pocket and get the ball down the field, but he will. He has some feet and he can move. So the Niners can't just tee off like, you know, they want a sitting duck back there in the pocket. So they're going to have to play disciplined football again. And they're going to have to wrap and tackle because Johnny and John, I don't know how many missed sacks we had in this game against Lamar Jackson, but they were right there. Like, just so I get the missed tackles. There might have only been 6 missed tackles in this game that were recorded, but I get why people felt like there were 30 because there were some sacks that were missed just being right there. So they got to just be fundamentally sound against this guy. I don't see him throwing for 300 plus yards and 5 touchdowns. The Commanders can't even score that many points, but he did have a nice little stint when he was out there on the football field, you know, this past weekend. So he's a professional quarterback. He's a veteran quarterback. You're going to get that. And the Niners just got to be disciplined and they'll be just fine.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll add to it. You go from playing Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson to Jacoby Brissett. So, like, the mobile quarterback's there, but you've spent weeks, you know, getting ready for this. And, you know, there was really only one big Lamar scramble that killed us in the, you know, the yards as far as, like, that explosive play goes. But, yeah, just answer your call. The Commanders have lost, I think, 6 straight. They're not a good football team. Brissett's way better, protects the ball. He hasn't thrown an interception this year. He's appeared in 3 games. It's a better team with Brissett, but let's be honest. You're fighting for the 1 seed. You go take care of business on the East Coast. You do what you got to do. You're the better team. You took one of their best players for pennies on the dollar. Go do what you got to do. Nothing. Yeah, put them down, man. Yeah, put them down.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at this. This feels like a desperation move from Ron Rivera to me. You know, he fired Jack Del Rio early in the season. Some people were like, I don't remember him throwing some people under the bus. I said, you know, Rivera's thrown a couple people under the bus this year. He threw Jack Del Rio under the bus, fired him. I believe he fired his special teams coordinator. Or, you know, there was another coach that was fired, or maybe it was the defensive backs coach. I think it was the defensive backs coach, something that he fired. You know, obviously trying to say we're having issues there and it's somebody else's fault. He's the head coach. All right. So, and Jack Del Rio, you know, whatever it may have been, you know, I don't know what was really going on there, but it seems a little fishy in a year where you're having the year you are, you have new ownership, you fire your defensive coordinator midseason, you fire another position coach, you end up trading away your two best defensive players. Because it was after they traded those guys away, the next game they lost, and then he fired Jack Del Rio.
Well, you know, it's like, did you see the press conference where they were talking to Jack, and he was like, well, you trade away two of your best players, and Jack cut him off. He's like, whoa. I didn't trade him away. I didn't trade him away. And then he got fired right after that. Like,
right. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, kinda, you got this situation where, you know, this is what happens. And now your young quarterback who they're trying to see, is this the guy for the future? Are they going to keep him, Sam Howell, or are you going to end up investing one of your high draft picks that you're going to get this year by being so terrible in a quarterback And Rivera is pulling that young guy and putting in Jacoby Brissett. Like, I don't understand the move. Like, I understand that he, you know, Jacoby Brissett's probably going to be a more reliable quarterback there than Sam Howell has been. But this feels like a desperation move of Rivera to preserve his job, of just trying to get something positive and win, as opposed to what the organization actually needs. And I don't see Rivera being there. This, to me, either you're going to get,
he's gone.
You know, This is a situation where guys are going to be playing for their jobs, or they completely want to see Rivera gone before the last week of the year, and they throw in the towel. I think the 49ers should roll in there and absolutely destroy the Commanders. Like, this is one of those things that, to me, if I was in as part of the Washington Commanders organization, I think everybody would be giving up on Ron Rivera. You know, and I'm not saying Ron Rivera is a bad guy. I don't know him personally. I don't know anything. Okay, I'm just saying, just reading from 35,000 foot perspective, this does not look good, and I see an organization wanting to quit on him and walk away and just move on, because there's just no, I don't see how you come back from this. So this should be a game the 49ers roll in there and they absolutely dominate them. It should be a cakewalk for them, and handle business, you know. Hope that, you know, as much as Timothy's gonna probably bag on me for this, is I want to see the Cowboys beat the Lions, you know, because it helps the 49ers out. You know, the Lions lose this week. Arizona beats Philadelphia this week, and the 49ers win. You have the number one seed locked up. You know, there it is. Then this team that's dealing with injuries, you don't have to beat the Rams. You can go in there. You can play Sam Darnold. Jordan Mason. Yeah, he probably won't. You can play Jordan Mason. You can play Jalen Moore. You don't have to play some of these guys that you want to see healthy in the playoffs. There's a super chat I want to get to here, because this wasn't on the notes, but I would love your guys' take on this, because some news did break this morning that Patrick Willis has made it to a top 15 finalist as the Hall of Fame. So, Too Much Sauce asks, better all-time Niner linebacker, Pat Willis or Fred Warner? Wayne, let's hear your take on this.
I think right now it's still Pat Willis, right? I mean, Fred Warner's probably going to play another 5 years, 6 years with the Niners. So I think overall he'll probably be the guy, but everybody loves Patrick Willis, man, and it's unfortunate that he couldn't continue to play. And he was the last of the linebacking position of what it used to be. Like, it has definitely changed, and I love what the hybrid linebacker is doing right now, and they're able to drop back in coverage and play safety-esque type football but still be able to stop the run. But Patrick Willis will always be probably my favorite linebacker, and I think he'll be the better all-time Niner linebacker. But again, Fred Warner wins championships. He has the durability. He stays healthy. He stays a Niner. He'll eventually take that crown.
Yeah, I agree with you. Willis, definitely. He came to the NFL the best linebacker. I had the wonderful opportunity hanging out with him last weekend in Arizona for the 40 Hours Rush road trip. It was so cool. But I will say this. Fred Warner's 27. His third All-Pro season is locked up. Warner's All-Pro this year.
Easily.
Yeah, Patrick Willis got 5. Can Fred get, you know, 3 more? I don't think that's a question. There's nobody testing his supremacy right now. I think Warner's going to take it. I do eventually. Now, again, Willis, he's in the clubhouse. What he's done is Hall of Fame worthy. He should get in this year. And congrats to him on being a finalist. But I'm telling you right now, if I was buying stock, man, Willis is going to be the greatest linebacker of all time.
Yeah, you know, I think you
49ers all time.
Yeah, 49ers all time. I think you guys make some excellent points that I want to agree with. And I do agree with them. That, you know, Patrick Willis, what we saw from him, one, we have to remember that Patrick Willis was not on a great team for half of his career. That he was the best defensive player on his team, and it wasn't close. And he was a guy who without anybody else on as a supporting cast, you know, really that 07 defense, that 08 defense when he came in, you know, his rookie year, dude had like 220 tackles. I mean, that's just insane. He was getting like 20 tackles a game in some of those games. And you know, he was, to me, when we make the argument, I think that Patrick Willis needs to be in the Hall of Fame. And here's why. You know, people always say, well, he didn't play long enough. You go, well, one, okay, what are the criteria for being in the Hall of Fame? One, they have to play at a really high level. And when you look at the kind of accolades that Patrick Willis had, the amount of all pros, the amount of Pro Bowls that he had, he has double what guys who were first ballot Hall of Famers have. Guys that got into the Hall of Fame, first ballot because they were an amazing player. Patrick Willis has double the all pros they have. He has more all pros than like 80% of the guys who are in the Hall of Fame right now. So there's not an argument that he didn't play at a high enough level. Two, no. You always say, can you talk about the history of the game without mentioning them? You absolutely cannot. Because if you look at the way that the linebacker position has changed for the last 15, 16 years, where you're seeing all of these matching zones now that were kind of, you know, Saban started doing them at Alabama because he had these really athletic linebackers. And everybody thought, well, you can't do that in the NFL. Receivers are just too fast. And then you get a guy like Patrick Willis who comes in and suddenly he can match the number three across the field, that he can match a Julio Jones type guy down the middle of the field, where normally you would never see a linebacker do something like that, where suddenly now the linebacker isn't just asked to go from tackle to tackle. He's asked to go from true sideline to sideline, or even, you know, maybe numbers to numbers. Now he truly is sideline to sideline because of the amount of speed that he's brought to the linebacker position. It completely changed how guys started valuing traits at the linebacker position. Because before Patrick Willis, your prototypical middle linebacker was a Brian Urlacher, was a Takeo Spikes, these big thumper guys who were going to be able to get in there and fill, and they were going to take on guards, and they brought in that ability to be physical and do that kind of stuff. Ray Lewis, to me, was the pinnacle of the traditional linebacker, of the what you would call the traditional, you know, Brian Urlacher, Derek Thomas sort of in mold. Patrick Willis ushered in the Luke Kuechlys, the Bobby Wagners, the Fred Warners. Okay, because you look at those guys and you compare them to the linebackers that you saw before Patrick Willis, the linebacker position has changed. And to me, Patrick Willis brought that in because of the amount of speed he brought to the linebacker position. And so when we talk about history of the game, you cannot talk about the history of the game and the linebacker position and what it is today without Patrick Willis. So for me, it's a shame that he is not in the Hall of Fame, that's not looked at, that's not considered. It's just, well, he didn't play long enough. He changed the game. He changed the defensive game.
I agree. The problem is he campaigned openly to the writers to vote in Bryce Young. Like, he marketed against himself, and I think this is a testament to kind of who he is. And then he did the same for Ronnie Lott, Roger Craig. When Roger Craig didn't make the semifinalist, then, you know, whatever. But to play devil's advocate, the writers would say this, and they're the ones that have the votes. Longevity, not there. Super Bowl, not there. And that's why I think he gets in now. And so some of the writers just have a chip that, look, there's certain criteria that have to be met. And Super Bowl and longevity is some of that for some of those writers. And so, you know, they hold off on those things, whether rightfully or not. I hate that the writers have to say so in this because they don't. Anyway, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but he's getting this year.
Especially when you see, you know, even some of the writers that cover the 49ers, you know, the things that are put out there, you go, I don't know if these are the people that you really want voting on this sort of thing. With Lone Draftsman, thanks for the super chat. He says, shout out to Dave Wilcox, other 49ers franchise star linebacker who passed away last April. Willis and Warner will join him in the Hall of Fame one day. And I think that's true. You know, I guess to the point of Fred Warner versus Patrick Willis. Patrick Willis was great every time he stepped on the field. I haven't seen quite that level of consistency from Fred Warner. We've had most of his games this year have been all pro Fred. There have been a few games he's had this year where I was really, you know, Cincinnati, for example, just jumps out at me that Fred Warner played one of his worst games in the last 3 years to me when we played Cincinnati. He was not good in that game. He was not what you would expect from Fred Warner. Patrick Willis had a high level of consistency that every time he stepped on the field,
day one,
he was the best player on the field and it wasn't close. And, you know, maybe when Navarro Bowman came on, like that was when that changed a little bit, but, you know, he was always great every single game. And I want to see Fred have that level of consistency. If Fred has that level of consistency for the next 5 years, we won't be asking about this argument will say, you know, Patrick Willis is great. Fred Warner is the greatest 49ers linebacker ever. So get with
and
that.
You've heard and Fred say consistency is the truest measure of greatness. He got that from D'Amico, and he's repeated it like 20 times.
Which so I think D'Amico got that from Saleh, because I remember Saleh saying that in a press conference one day. He says, you know, the greatest measure of success is consistency. Or consistency is the greatest metric of success. Saleh said that, I believe it was 2017. It was about three quarters of the way through that season. Why I remember that as it's from
Johnny
a press conference from Robert Saleh,
it's
weird. I can't explain it. As we look forward to some predictions here, what is your give us your favorite win over Washington ever? The lone draftsman says I got 96 49ers at Washington, hard fought 19-16 win between 2-8-3 teams in nasty weather. That's his favorite memory win over Washington. So Wayne, give us your prediction and your favorite win over Washington. John, you'll be right up after him.
I mean, I like the Mud Bowl. I thought that was pretty cool, man. You know, and it was 9-0. It was all Robbie Gould. Couldn't get into the end zone. No team got into the end zone. We shut him out, right? And it's just a bunch of slip and slide. I mean, it looked like the official slip and slide. If you grew up and you had the slip and slide, you were that was amazing. I grew up in the hood, so we couldn't use the slip and slide because it was like on concrete, but we figured it out anyway. But my point is that was a great game. No superstars did anything in that game. But the way Nick Bosa ended that game on that sack was official. And I think that's – you see all the players, the pictures from that look like they came out of a battle from Game of Thrones. I loved it. I loved it a lot. That would be my favorite game, 2019 rookie season, Nick Bosa, Deebo Samuel.
That's where I was going to go. Thanks, Wayne.
You're welcome, John. That's what you get for letting me go first.
I love it. I'm going to go back. I remember the game. I just looked it up. The divisional round in the playoffs. I remember playing them back in 92. You know, I was a young kiddo, but I just became a fan. I became a fan when I was 9, so 1991. And then we get into this, and yeah, you beat them in the playoffs. Ricky Running Waters was like one of my favorite players ever, him and Jerry Rice. And I just remember having a good game. We won 20-13. It was 90, you know, it was played in January 93 at Candlestick. Obviously, we didn't go to the Super Bowl that year, but I remember that game, and I remember flexing because we would walk to school, and I had a buddy that was a diehard Washington fan and a diehard Cowboys fan and a Steelers fan, and we would fight all the time. I remember that. I had my new hoodie. Oh, man, good times. Good
starter.
Times. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I got to go back to the Mud Bowl. That was what I was sitting there in my mind. I'm like, I'm going with the Mud Bowl. And then Wayne just blurts it up, Mud Bowl. You know, because I will always remember the picture that they had of Mike Person.
That's
who,
it.
You know,
with
his beard, just mud, just dripping everywhere.
That's the one.
And that was the feels great baby game, you know, that became the saying, because Aaron Andrews was interviewing Jimmy G, and he said, you know, feels great baby, and they walk off the field 9-0.
That was that game.
Yeah,
the tension
that
was
that
high.
Game. And and you know, like,
I was out there too.
It was we kicked 3 field goals. That was it. But it was so fun. I mean, it was like everything that you dream about when you're a kid playing football, like that you want. You love to play football in the mud. Mm-hmm. And to see grown men playing football in the mud and having fun like little kids was just amazing. And it's like you said, one of the greatest memories of it, and just the images that came out was just amazing.
Can we go back to that? Can we go back to winning with defense and not like having to put up 40 points and running the ball and field goals being a good thing? Like, this defense is capable, Kyle. Come on, man. We're going full circle here. Go back to your 2019 Mud Bowl. Run the damn ball. Protect the ball.
I just want to put out that I know Robbie Gould won that game, but he missed his first field goal attempt in that game. I don't remember anybody giving him any flack for it.
Dude, that was like a snow globe game, though. You
right.
You know what I mean? That was crazy.
But both kickers missed in that game, and then Robbie Gould was – he won the duel.
Three out of four.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is we got to the red zone literally like the 3-yard line 2-3 times and just couldn't cash in.
It was a mess.
George Kittle, that's the first – like, why don't we do those plays anymore? Like, George Kittle, line up in the backfield. I ain't saying this is 2019. That means that they haven't seen it since 2019, which means it probably will work.
Wayne's East Coast is coming out. I love it. He's getting fired up.
I don't get it. Awesome. Like, you have all these weapons on the field that could do multiple things, can line up in multiple ways, and it's just steady Eddie. Yep, George Kittle, go in motion, set the block, whatever. No, line his ass up in the backfield. Let him punch it in. He could run. Sorry.
I love it. I love it. I got to get to a home for a meeting. My wife has a work meeting, but I want to get through a few of these super chats. Three more came in, and I know one came, I think it's from your channel, John. Glass City says, what do you think of Verrett getting playing time? Kyle Shanahan said it's a plan for the future as well. I know he gave up a touchdown. That was a rough play, though. Yeah, it was a real rough situation he was in. Kyle said it was, you know, a plan to get his feet wet, that he'd been playing slot more in the practices, which was a little surprising. Maybe that's because he doesn't quite have the downfield speed that he used to have after, you know, 18 rebuilt legs. I'm not sure. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm in the minority on this. I kind of liked it. He got 5 snaps, didn't go well. But now with the safety down, you're kind of seeing what's going to happen, because if Isaiah Oliver is playing safety, which I fully expect if Jair Brown's out, now this dude's one snap away from playing. So he got his feet wet, didn't go well, you know, gave up the touchdown, 5 snaps. But hopefully that's behind him if you got to rely on him moving forward. We've got depth. We're building depth. And so I will always err on the side of depth personally.
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't care if he's been practicing at it. I just, if you're going to put him in the game, let him go where he's comfortable, not where he's uncomfortable. He must have had some really good practices, though, for Kyle to want him to get out there to play in the slot. And listen, I know that play, he gave up the touchdown, but I mean, it was a scramble play. So at the end of the day, yeah, it's on him, but it was a tough play. Maybe if it was another nickel, he had 5 snaps. He didn't play bad on all 5 snaps. So I just didn't him being out of position to me.
I love the idea of again, rotating men. I don't know if this was the game that I would have wanted to do that
in the game
and the time in the game, but you know, the potential of what he can be in this defense is fantastic. We need another man coverage corner, a guy who can play man really well. We need to be able to play man from the slot really well. You know, to pair with Mooney Ward, Wilkes likes to play man coverage. He just does. You know, we are a zone coverage team, and Wilkes likes to play man coverage more. It's another tool in his toolbox for that. Darrell Luter was a draft pick, I thought, that was a Wilkes guy. He's brought in to play press man, what Wilkes loves to do. And so I love to see Verrett out there getting his feet wet. You know, just made me, if nothing else, just happy for him with everything that he's been through. We Walked on the Moon says, Philly and Dallas fans should take it slow in here. Intelligent football discussions are inconceivable to them. Inconceivable! throwing a little shade.
I'm not sure that word means what you think it means.
You know, I will say, I lost a lot of respect for Philly fans over the last 11 months. Yeah. I used to kind of like the franchise, and then suddenly I had to block like 200 people on Twitter who were sliding in my DMs with some pretty nasty stuff and coming at me with all sorts of stuff. I don't know if you guys had the same thing.
I don't get that flack. Like the Philly fan, like Filthy, he's in my chat. He's a really cool dude, very respectful. So if he's coming in here, he's coming in here for intel and intel only. Like they, he must have a direct connection to the Eagles, but no, they all are cool. Timothy's just a little pain in the ass, because he's gonna, if I go into another fan base's chat, it's going to be 49 of this, 49 of that. So I expect it from them as well. As long as they're respectful, it's all good, man.
Yeah, as long as they're respectful, it's totally fine. I did a preview video of the Eagles, and about half the fans in there, my review after the Eagles game, every Philly fan that came and watched that and commented, they were respectful. They were good.
Most
I got one of my good friends. He's a Philly fan. We text, you know, we didn't text that day for obvious reasons. But you know, we're great. It's some of the crazy ones on social media. They get the ones that go to the games.
Those are the ones you got to watch out for. If they live in Philly, those are the ones you got to watch out for. I'll never attend a game there again, ever. I don't want to go to jail.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to fight a grandma either, because I got close to
it. And we've heard from different players, you know, who've been there, not just 49ers players, who said that they won't take their wives to games in Philadelphia anymore. Michael Pickle here says, happy holidays. Gentlemen, we got this, Niner Nation. Keep your heads up. Playoff mode loading. How do you guys feel going into playoffs? Let's wrap it on this one. So,
yeah. I cut you off, Wayne. My bad.
No, I feel
great. I feel like we're exactly where we need to be. We got checked a little bit, which I don't mind. You got to reset. How did the 49ers reset after the 3-game loss? They went on a 6-game tear. You go on a 6-game tear right now, you win the damn Super Bowl number 6. I feel just fine with where we are. We're in the perfect position. We're in the best position in the entire NFL. Even better position than the Ravens are. If you look at playoff seedings and the chances to get number 1, we have the best opportunity in front of us in the entire NFL. Is everything perfect? No. But I love where we are.
I agree with John. Not worried one bit. You can factor in injuries, you can factor in bad play, missed calls, whatever. I think the Niners are right where they need to be. I think they've been humbled all season long with some of these losses. And it's funny how they chose to lose to these AFC teams. That's why I think they got something special for any AFC team that they feel like they're going to face in the Super Bowl. Niners Super Bowl all the way. Easy for me. Playoffs, let's go.
I'm feeling great about where the team is. Get that number one seed. Get some needed rest, you know, because we have a chance with that number one seed to go into the divisional round of the playoffs as maybe the healthiest team in football. When you start looking at some of the teams and the major injuries they've had, the 49ers have a chance to be the healthiest team in football, which when was the last time we said that? I think the last time was 2012. And what happened in 2012? We went to the Super Bowl. So I feel great about where we are. Lock up that number one seed, get you some extra rest, get these guys really healthy, and just roll into the Super Bowl. I mean, that's what it needs to be. Roll through the playoffs, get there. So, John, I'm going to have you go first on this one. Your score prediction for the game, and then Wayne, your score prediction for the game, and take us out of here.
I'm going, it's going to be a little more defensive than we thought. I'm going 27-11, a weird score. 27-11, 49ers, right the ship. We're a better team.
I'm going 34-10. It's a 30-30 game, baby. Easy.
All right. I'm going 31-13. I think I see Washington getting 3 scores in the game. I don't see them scoring more than 1 touchdown. And I think you're right. This is going to be a 30-30. They don't have much of a pass rush. They're strong up the middle, but I think this is going to be a game you see crack toss a lot. You're going to see Christian McCaffrey running down the sideline, Brandon Ayuk leading out there.
I
think you're going to see Ayuk get hit on a couple of those big over routes, Deebo Samuel on some screen passes, and it's going to be lights out for the Commanders. So thank you guys so much for joining me today and having this. This was so much fun. It's always great to talk to you guys. John, real quick, where can people find you?
49ers Rush, whatever social media, whatever, just type in 49ers Rush. We should pull up, enjoy our podcast. And I get it recorded with Wayne all the time. But man, Johnny, we need to do this more often, man. I really appreciate it.
I agree.
Yeah, this is so much fun. Wayne, where can people find you?
At The Wayne Breezy everywhere. You might even see me on a billboard soon. So yeah, The Wayne Breezy, one of your best 49er content creators, man. I just love talking about this team.
Capital T.
It's true. I mean, that's not even ego. That's just a fact. I mean, that's like saying that water is wet. So thank you guys so much for being so thank you so much for being here. And as always, stay safe, stay healthy, and go Niners.
When your money's on the line, choose a trusted sportsbook that gives you tools to win, like MyBookie. At MyBookie, doesn't matter if your team's up or down, you can easily cash out or bet the game live to come out on the winning side. Use MyBookie for daily odds boost, same game parlays, I like teasers, and take advantage of the huge prize pool contest. Plus, MyBookie currently has a no strings attached cash bonus that lets you deposit, withdraw, quick. Carries a one-time rollover. Can't find that anywhere else. Just use promo code 49ers, 49ERS, or scan the QR code on this video right next to my face here to claim your own cash deposit bonus now. That's promo code 49ers. So try my money bag. You basically roll the dice and it picks a team and gives you extraordinary odds on who's going to win the Super Bowl. Lots of fun options there. So bet anything, anytime, anywhere. And I do mean anywhere, wherever you are, you can bet with MyBookie. Just make sure you use the promo code 49ERS and let's go. Let's make some money together.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.